Hi, this is Harlem, and you have downloaded the next episode, episode 45 of the Fresh Ubuntu podcast. I thank you very much for joining us this week. Peter will be joining us shortly for the, of course, the news and special segments as well. Again, thank you very much. I hope everyone had a good Halloween. And we are all, of course, gearing up for the holiday season. It is upon us once again. So, in any case, we are ready for the next show, and it will start up very shortly. Thanks again for subscribing, and I hope you enjoy. And good afternoon, or good evening, or whatever time it might be. This is Harlem, and I'm here with Peter Nicolaitis, and this is the Fresh Ubuntu Podcast, and welcome once again.
Hello, hello.
Hello, Peter. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's a blustery day over here in the Thousand Acre Woods, and what's the weather like over there on your side of the world?
Getting a little bit chilly. It is now November, and it's starting to finally feel like autumn.
A lot like autumn here as well, too. So one thing before we go on with the news, I'm a little bit of a football fan, and I just want to congratulate the University of Oregon Ducks, who went on to defeat the Arizona State University Sun Devils this past weekend. They're ranked number 4 and number 5, respectively, Arizona State being number 4 and the Oregon Ducks being number 5, which I think, I hope, and I believe will be the number 3 ranked Oregon Ducks team as soon as all the games are finished by this weekend. But anyway, congratulations to all my Oregon homies and those of us who root for the Ducks.
Quack, quack.
Yep. And so we are going to go on with the news today, and I will go ahead and let Peter go ahead with that. So, Peter, take it away.
Taking it away, my friend. All right. Our first news item this week is the GOS, the Conceptual Google Operating System. Apparently, Walmart has announced that they are selling a $199, or I guess in Walmart fashion, a $198 EverX PC, which comes with a customized version of Ubuntu on it. And this machine is it's based on Ubuntu 7.10, Gutsy Gibbon, although it is not running the GNOME desktop. Instead, they chose Enlightenment E17. And it's very heavily modified, which has a green Google theme embedded in it. Provides easy access to things like YouTube, Google searches, all kinds of Google searches, Google Calendar, and Google Maps. We actually kind of got a kick about that in the office because we were reading about all of the great software that's included with this machine. And, you know, they include the Zine Media Player, they've got Skype and OpenOffice, and then they include other applications like Gmail and Google Docs and Spreadsheets and, you know, Google Maps and Google Calendar. And I said, that's pretty funny. I think those are just links. Just before this podcast, we were chatting with Dave Yates from Lotta Linux Links, and he had mentioned that actually you can add the repository to your regular regular Ubuntu installation. Right. And we got to double check, but I believe the repository address was packages.googlepc.com. Does that sound right?
Right, /GOS.
So I thought that was interesting. It definitely implies a close relation to Google, but according to Dave, there really isn't one. I'd be curious to see if there isn't one. I would be expecting Google's lawyers to be all over them really quickly. So I thought that was pretty cool. They mentioned that in one of the articles, we've got three links for this in the show notes. Apparently, a comparable hardware EverX PC with Windows Vista Home Basic costs $298, basically because of the Microsoft license. Instead, you can get a machine with a fully functional version of Linux. And it sounded like it was a decent little machine.
Did it mention the specs?
Yeah, one of the articles did. It's nothing, you know, super duper. It's got a 1.5 gigahertz VIA processor. I thought that was kind of interesting because, you know, they opted for the VIA chips. It has a half gig of memory. It's got a DVD-ROM, CDRW, an 80 gig hard drive, 6 USB ports, Ethernet, and a telephone jack and serial and parallel ports. So, you know, again, nothing super fancy. But for someone who, you know, basically is just going to do regular, you know, word processing, surf the web, checking email, You know, it's got all your stuff right there. Hmm. And only $200, so not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. Very interesting,
not
Peter.
Yep. And that was our first news item. Another one we had was not so much news, but a blog post from a guy who had some pragmatic and visual behavioral critique of Ubuntu and GNOME. I thought this was a really interesting article. I found this on Dig. It got a lot of digs on the site. And it's a very long article. But if you're interested in usability and maybe occasionally just getting kind of frustrated finding some stuff if you're navigating through GNOME, this is a very interesting article. It's very long. It's in small font and takes several pages to read through the whole thing. And it was actually really funny because I read it on my Nokia E61 cell phone, and it was so long that basically the scroll bar was useless. I couldn't tell how far down the article I was going when I was reading it, so I was just wondering the whole time, is this ever going to end? But anyway, it did end. It was very interesting critique, and it talks about some of the things that we have talked about previously in the podcast. Things about how you have certain things under display settings, which are both under preferences and administration. You know, why are screens and graphics under one, but screen settings or appearance preferences under another? He goes into a lot of, you know, very interesting stuff. And, you know, the guy is obviously an Ubuntu user. It's not like he was just trashing the thing. But I think he had very good, very useful critique on the GNOME desktop and specifically Ubuntu's implementation of it. So that's definitely worth a read, but you know, if you're going to read it, carve out some time because it is a very long article. And then our final news item for the week is, as we know, the Ubuntu Developers Summit is going on in Boston. And one of the things that has come out of that is the implementation roadmap for Hardy Heron. And I got to tell you, Harlem, this looks pretty ambitious. I saw there's so much stuff on here, and I think it looks like Hardy's shaping up to be a very, very interesting and powerful release. Do you have any input on that?
Yeah, I have to agree with you, Peter, and basically this is going to be the next long-term support release, LTS. The last one was Dapper Drake, which was my very first actual experience with Ubuntu and with any other Linux product. Period. If you were going to try anything, I think if you got in during the Dapper Drake release, I think that was probably the one to get into. I feel really sorry for the people who went into EdgeEF and Feisty Font and now, of course, Gutsy Gibbon, because the ease of transition with the long-term support release was a whole lot easier. At least it was for me. Now, you're right. It is very ambitious, and I am... you know, not sure if they're going to be able to finish it on time, for one thing. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that actually excites me, and I'm sure it will excite many other folks, is that they are going to gut the whole artwork from the top down, from the splash screen all the way down to the visual artwork you see on the wallpaper. And I hear that it might go to orange and black. We may have to say goodbye to the brown, which I'm not altogether fond of anyway. Although I have gotten used to it a bit. It does separate it from the other quote-unquote operating systems. But it is very ambitious. I'm looking forward to this one.
Yeah, one of the things I saw that was actually in the previous news article I mentioned, the Architect Fantasy link there, he actually talked about a little bit about brown, and he pointed out one thing is that it's Ubuntu's signature color. Right. So if you see a screenshot and it's brown, people instantly know that's Ubuntu.
Right.
And I got to say that, you know, from a branding perspective, in that one respect, I think that's a plus because no one else is using brown. Unfortunately, I guess that's about all the good things I could say about it.
Right. No. Well, I mean, I understand the branding issue, and somewhat I agree with you. But again, I think there are some things that could be implemented a little bit better, you know. And mm-hmm. for instance, the wallpaper that comes standard with Gutsy Gibbon, mm-hmm. I in fact, changed it. And I mentioned this a couple of podcasts, maybe last podcast, yep. I think. I changed it yep. to that elephant one, which was a yep. much better implementation of the brown theme. So go ahead.
Diverge a little bit. Sorry. If in the back, back in that previous article, too, he mentions that one thing that it might be good for the Ubuntu folks to have a couple of different themes involved. Now, all you did is change the desktop wallpaper.
Right.
And that's generally, in the past, I have done that a lot. I, you know, change it so there's like no background and just have a blue desktop. That in and of itself makes a huge difference because, you know, you see your desktop a lot.
Right.
So, you know, there's just changing the backgrounds. But of course, you can do a lot more, you know, to, you can change all sorts of things. If you go into the appearance preferences, you can make all sorts of changes. And they do have other themes. I hear a lot of folks, are very happy with the clear looks theme. And I've used that from time to time as well.
Uh-huh.
But over time, I've gotten used to the brown. So, you know, it doesn't really bother me all that much anymore.
Looking forward to see how they implement this new artwork strategy into the new release of the long-term support mm-hmm. release. So,
yep. A couple of other interesting things that I see on the blueprint or the roadmap are Kubuntu catch-up for Ubuntu, basically to ensure that Kubuntu has all the same features of Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
I know a couple of people have complained a little bit about that. My friend Scott, he runs Kubuntu. He likes KDE instead of GNOME. So, you know, he has complained a couple of times, like, oh, yeah, you can't do that with Kubuntu. And I was like, oh, really? Okay. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. They want to improve the add remove software application so that it's a desirable default way of adding software. They don't have a, I guess that you can read in and get some more details on that, but that sort of goes, I think, to address the whole issue of, you know, you can add remove software, you can also use Synaptic, you can also go to the command prompt, and maybe they're going to standardize that up a little bit. One of the things they're, they want to do is address the top bugs with Compiz Fusion. That's good. That does kind of, go to, you know, address the fact that it, you know, there's a little bit of bugginess there in Compiz, which we've talked about on previous podcasts also.
Yep.
Something that I mentioned last week when we were chatting with Dave also was better integration for Wine. Someone has listed on the list a more integrated, intuitive, functional environment for running Windows applications via Wine is essential for achieving a true competitor to Windows and solving bug number one. And if you're not familiar with that, if you go over to the launchpad, the bug tracker for Ubuntu, you'll see that bug number one is that Microsoft has a dominance in the desktop market share. So basically, one of the ways someone has recognized that you're going to have to run Windows apps to be able to pull that away. There's a lot more, I mean a lot more, on this roadmap. So definitely check that out if you're at all interested in the new version, Hardy Heron, the long-term support version that is due out next April.
One last word about that that Wine thing is that I am very surprised, even though I think Wine is a really great application, you will oftentimes get a lot of resistance from lots of Linux folks saying, well, you don't need to run those things. You should run the alternative software, OpenOffice, for one thing, GIMP, and that kind of stuff. Now I'm seeing a little bit of sort of a change in the mindset here that some of those applications need to be run on Linux. Photoshop, for one thing, needs to have a Linux client. You know, so many other applications, financial software applications, need to have a Linux version. And now you're hearing more of that kind of talk.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, totally I agree that the best thing, obviously, is native apps, you know, native application support on Linux. But there are just some software out vendors out there who probably are never going to run a Linux version until, you know, until maybe Linux has desktop dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're big and their, you know, names start with micro and end with soft,
right.
Or whether they're small and just may not have the budget to develop on multiple platforms. You know, Wine is an excellent way to leverage existing applications that you've got I think that improved support and integrating it, I think that would be a real shot in the arm for Linux. So that's about all we have for news this week, but we had a lot of feedback, if I recall.
Yeah, we had quite a bit of emails this week, and we had another another voicemail, which we'll get to in just a moment, but I'm going to go first to the emails.
Yeah, let's pick out some of those and see what we had.
Okay. The first one is from Venkatesh Nanda Kumar. I hope I didn't butcher that name badly. But anyway, he says, I don't know if this existed in Feisty, but now under add and remove programs, there is this thing called Ubuntu Restricted Extras, and similarly, Kubuntu Restricted Extras, which downloads all restricted codecs, Flash, Java, Microsoft, TrueType fonts, which I thought was in the same lines of the restricted drivers concept and was a really useful addition. Did you notice that? I thought that was always there since Feisty or even Edgy.
I think that has been there since Feisty. I never really ran Edgy just because of the, you know, the problems I had installing it. I stuck with Dapper during the Edgy time period.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the restricted extras have been there also. Again, I didn't run Feisty all that much, so I don't really know. But I know like the whole restricted drivers manager was there. But, you know, I've had some people have pointed out that there have been enhancements to it. But I thought that that was there also beforehand. But I really don't know right now. I'm tempted to just fire up a Feisty install just to check.
Right.
But
he may just be thinking about the, you know, the codecs and that kind of stuff, which now you can get actually quite easily now in Gutsy.
Yes.
So maybe that's what he might be talking about. As I understand, you can still get them even in Dapper, Edgy, and Feisty. They're all included in some repositories. And, you know, you don't necessarily need the helper applications such as Easy Ubuntu or Automatics. Although those just make things a little bit easier to get, so...
Right. I think you've always been able to go in and edit your repositories file and, you know, say where you want to save these things. Mm-hmm. But they're just making it so that, you know, it's basically click this and you got it.
Right. Right. And this one is from Michael Kidd, who left a comment on the blog at freshubuntu.org. And he said, I just found your podcast and so far it's a hit. I was trying to listen to your show from September 26, 2006. On your setting up your HP printer, and I was using the audio applet, and he said the applet was giving him some chipmunk audio. And so I hope I'm actually going to delete that audio because that is now defunct. And the reason why I included this is that there was one feature in Gutsy that we hadn't mentioned yet, and that was the auto detect the printer. And have you tested that out yet, Peter?
I have not. Actually, we did mention that briefly. I think it was 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, we did mention it, but we hadn't touched on it before. And the reason why I say it now is because we had to go through all kinds of things just to get our printers, especially Hewlett-Packard printers, to print up on, to work in the Linux environment. So and that's why I mentioned it. And thank you, Michael, for letting us know. Most likely, I will delete that. That has now become obsolete.
You could save it and be a little bit of, you know, a little bit of Ubuntu history. Well, seriously though, Harlem, what if people are running Dapper Drake?
They could still be running.
Dapper supported through 2009 on the desktop and 2011 on the server side. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you might have people who are staying and for whatever reason, you know, the long-term support distro or the long-term support release appeals to them. Something to think
about. Good point. This next email is from Brett Marshall. And he emailed me and said, hey guys, I just caught the Fresh Ubuntu podcast for the first time. Welcome to the podcast, Brett. He says he thoroughly enjoyed it twice. Good reviews, good info, good personality. It's a hit. He has been talking about donating some theme music and asked me what I was looking for. But the reason why I mentioned this email is in the postscript, he said that the ISP is indeed throttling your torrent transfer. Mm-hmm. That's right. And wget is faster for me than browser-based downloaders and allows you to resume the download. Although I haven't noticed much of a difference using either Firefox or wget or any other download manager for that matter, because all the downloads top out for me at about 150 kilobytes per second. Those are about how fast my downloads have been going. So can't really tell one way or the other. Thank you for letting us know. I had a feeling that they were probably throttling, although they don't want to say it. Whatever.
No, they don't want to admit that they're not giving us the unlimited and 8 megabytes megabit per second download, right. et cetera,
yeah. Yeah, we know what you're up to. We know what you're up to. All right. This next one is from let me see here. This next one is from Emmett Stewart, and he says, "Hey guys, I've been using Jaiku for the social networking. I prefer it since I can use it as an RSS aggregator or any other online content that I generate, and it falls into one feed. I know it isn't the true social networking sites, but if I keep myself busy generating content on blogs, Flickr, etc., then I think it consolidates that information in a way that is a nice substitute. I've not used Twitter yet, which I understood is similar to Jaiku for the mini blog application. Can you tell me which client you recommend for that? And I'd rather hear from you which ones you both prefer rather than trying each one of them out myself. He enjoys the show. He says, keep up the good work. P.S. When will we finally get iTunes for Linux so that we can jack up the ratings on the open source programming there? One day, one day. Emmett, that's a good question. I have primarily been using Twitter quite a bit. I've have other feeds on there. I get CNN, up-to-date news and ESPN stuff. And, of course, I get Peter's tweets as well. So, Peter, you might be better able to answer this question. What application do you use?
Well, I guess when he says what applications, does he mean, like, I'm assuming he means, how we use it and what we do with it?
Yeah. It's,
I started out with Twitter, and the first thing I did with it was that I made it so that it was all of my updates were private. They were protected. And basically following, I think it was Tom Merritt from Buzz Out Loud says that that's what he does. He keeps those pretty close to the vest, just like friends and close friends and family members, so that you have, a private up to, what are you doing kind of thing. And then I decided a few weeks ago, I said, nah, you know what, I'm just going to open it up because I'm going on the theory or the assumption that anything that you type onto the internet, whether you're sending it into an email or posting it on a website, you should assume that that is or could be public at some point, because you never know, how your data might get intercepted or the place where your data is hosted may change their terms of service, or they may have a bug. Facebook a few months ago had a problem where they exposed a lot of stuff that was supposed to be kept confidential or kept viewable only to your friends, and it actually was exposed to the general public. So anyone with a Facebook account could find out, all sorts of stuff that you thought were private. So because of that, anything I put on Twitter is, it's just basically what am I doing kind of stuff. Now, I use it to track some other podcasters that I, that I'm a fan of. And I also use it as a real-time, this is what I'm doing kind of thing, to keep in touch with my wife or with my employees. So if I can't get onto Instant Messenger easily, if I'm at a client location, but I have a website, web browser, I can access the Twitter website and, give a status update. I use Twitter for making notes to myself. Specifically, if there's a website that I want to check out or that I'm reading, I make a note in it. Or if I'm working on a long project, I use it to take notes too sometimes. It's actually like a little mini notebook, and I used it a few months back when I was having some trouble troubleshooting a really obscure switching problem at one of my clients' networks. And I would just post as, every hour or so I'd say, okay, I tried this, didn't work, tried this, didn't work. And I used it because I was able to access it very easily from my mobile phone. Which was pretty handy. Now, I do also have a Jaiku account, and I don't use it that much. I think the reason really was just because Twitter was just easier to access right off the bat. It was just simpler and easier for me to get into Twitter. Although, back a couple months ago when I was on my social networking kick and I was trying them all out, you remember that, Harlem, you went through that a little bit with me.
Oh, yeah.
I actually was working to get all of my Pounces, Twitters, and Jaikus all linked in together. And I made it so that anything that I submit via Pounce will actually filter down both to Jaiku and to my Twitters. There's a blog posting I found to do that, and I think I actually blogged about it myself. Another thing I do with my Twitters is I use a service called Twitter Feed, and I use that so that anything that I either share on my Google bookmarks or post to my Delicious bookmarks, sorry, I said my Google bookmarks, I meant share on Google Reader, or post to Delicious bookmarks, or I post to my blog, gets linked into my Twitter. That way, folks who, you know, just for whatever reason are following what I do, I know we have some fans of the podcast have been following me on Twitter also, they can just, you know, see what I'm doing. And I also use it, I'm encouraging my friends to use Twitter now, instead of sending out those emails, you know, those emails that you get from people that you never really get any emails from folks except forwards. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you got to check this out, and they send it to everyone in their address book or something.
Right.
I've been encouraging folks to say, hey, you know, stop sending out mass emails to everyone in your address book. That's so late 1990s, you know. This is the way to do it. If you think something's interesting, post it in your Twitter feed. And that way folks who are interested, you know, if they want to follow you, they just click on follow. And if they don't, they don't have to. So those are a few of the things that I use Twitter for. It really is personal preference, and like many social networking tools, the big thing is, where are your friends? You know, where are your people? Who's going to go? Like, I don't log into Jaiku on a regular basis. So if someone else is posting things on Jaiku that I can only see there, I'm just not going to see those unless I take a couple of steps and, you know, subscribe to them somewhere else, like in my Google Reader. Now, Jaiku does have more features than Twitter. That's no question. And I'm probably going to take some steps to merge the two so that anything that shows up on one goes to the other. But for right now, I like Twitter. Just I think the interface is just simpler. It loads quickly. And on those days when I'm really just not feeling the love for Google, I know I get to use a non-Google product, even though my info is totally public and I know Google has full access to it anyway.
Yeah.
Slash rant and all.
We will get to that on another podcast. Thank you for the email. And yeah, Twitter so far has been my favorite web application thus far. I'm also a user of Pounce, Facebook. I think I even have a Flickr account, which I don't use, and a YouTube account, which aren't necessarily social network. Well, they are, but they aren't in the mini blog application sense. But Twitter has been the one I've been using. Now, there are other things on Twitter that you can use specifically for Twitter, and maybe not specifically, but there are websites called like Twitter Feed that will help you get your feed out.
That's apparently the one I use.
Twitterific is another one. Now, there's also other things like Jot.com that will take a voicemail or a voice call and translate that into a text output, and that can go onto either your blog or whichever one you specify. It can also go onto your Twitter feed as well.
I've got a comment to add to that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Google bought them.
Oh, and Google bought them. That's right. So there you go. That's another application we can use from them.
It's another application you can use. If you use the social network, you can be acquired by Google.
Right. And I think there's a new one out called Udders, which allows you to record a voicemail and also put that onto your Twitter feed. Lots of things that you can use with Twitter. I'm supposing that you can probably use the same thing with Jaiku, but Peter is right. It's where all your people are. That's what makes a social network valuable individually. Choose wisely and make sure all your friends are on the same network, I guess. So,
keep your friends close and your social networkers closer.
Right. This next one is from a comment left by a gentleman named Andrew Moster, or Moster, M-O-S-T-E-R. And he's commented on the blog, and he says, I installed Gutsy on a Toshiba tablet R15 laptop, and to my surprise, the tablet feature on the laptop didn't work with the pen. But the funny thing was, Ubuntu 7.04 did work with the pen. Any ideas how to get the laptop tablet working again fully? Thanks, guys. And quite honestly, it's probably a little bit more technical than I can actually handle, but maybe, Peter, do you have any suspicions on what it might be?
I did a very little research on this, not having, you know, a tablet PC, so I couldn't really test any of this out. Mm-hmm. I did do a little bit of Googling around, trying to find something. I found another link that talked about this on a Mandriva 2006 box with another person who had a Toshiba R15 tablet. And basically, it's the settings for this person's xorg.conf file, which he used to get it working again. So that's one thing. Now, since it worked in a previous version, I think he said it was working in, what, Feisty?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
One thing to try would be to go back and grab your xorg.conf files from Feisty Fawn. Now, I've actually used this two or three times in just the last few weeks. I had a couple of experiences where, for instance, I was able to boot from my live CD and recognize that I had a widescreen 19-inch monitor or 19-inch flat panel display. But when I actually booted off the hard drive after installing, the only resolution I was given was the standard, you know, regular aspect ratio displays, so like 1280 by 1024 or 1024 by 768. So that was really frustrating. And then it finally occurred to me that all I had to do was boot off the live CD, mount my hard drive, you know, from while booting off the live CD, and copy the X11 directory, the Etsy X11 folder, the whole thing, from the live CD onto my hard drive, and then presto, I reboot, and I've got all the resolutions that I didn't have. So if it's a case where you boot off the live CD and it is working fine, but by the time you install it doesn't, you could try that. And if it was a case where it worked under Feisty, but it doesn't work under Gutsy, you could boot off of Feisty and again grab that whole Etsy X11 directory. And you could just, you know, boot off a live CD, tar it up to a thumb drive or something, and then boot again into Gutsy and then extract it. That might be simpler than going through and mounting your hard drive and, you know, be able to pull the files off that way if you're a novice user. But if you're not, and you know, terms like mounting the drive and booting off the live CD don't scare you, that's what I would try.
Cool. Okay. Well, I hope that helps you. I will post that link to the website for you at freshubuntu.org, and that will be where the show notes are. I think we have one last one here. Hold on one second.
My question is, do you guys know of a good Linux-friendly, Ubuntu-friendly sound card that will install and put an output full duplex without messing with anything that's under $50? Do you know of a sound card like that? I've been looking on the internet for some specs or some hardware compatibility list like Red Hat has, but I haven't really seen an official Ubuntu hardware compatibility list on the internet. So I was wondering what the best sound card you think would be.
I got to tell you, I'm not the person to ask, because every machine that I've bought in like the last 5 years or so, I've just used onboard sound that came with it, whether right. It's been a laptop or a desktop, whatever has been installed, you know, on the desktop chipset, that's mm-hmm. what I've been using. So I really don't know. I know a few years ago I would have say, you know, get some kind of sound blaster from Creative because that's the gold standard, but I guess that's just not the case these days.
Yeah, lately they haven't been the case mm-hmm. these days. It really is hit and miss because I'm having the same problems myself. The sound cards that come with your computer right now, for instance, in my laptop, works just fine. You know, it's integrated sound card onto the motherboard, and that's it works just fine. Linux picks it up, and I have no issues with it. However, on my desktop, and I have an SB Live, Creative SB Live sound card, and that has issues. And oftentimes, you know, on some boot ups, I will get sound. Now, every now and again, and this is happening more and more often, I will boot up and I won't get any sound, and then I will reboot, and oftentimes I'll have to reboot 3 or 4 times to get any sound at all. So, you know, there are issues with the sound thing that I have not, that I have started experiencing with Feisty. And this all started with Feisty. There was one particular kernel release that came up that kind of messed everything up for me. But and I thought it was all fixed with the latest restricted modules release, but that didn't work either. So it is kind of hit and miss. And so I'm hoping they get it fixed in Hardy Heron, or at least they get it addressed. And also, this might put a little pressure on Creative to supply some decent drivers for Linux users too. So we will see. And I'm sorry, we could not help you. There is, do you know what the device database is? There's a device database for Linux compatible devices, and
I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Hang on a second here. There's a few things that you may be thinking of. One is there's a website out there called linuxhardwaredatabase.net. Mm-hmm. There's another called the linuxcompatible.org. Right. And another one I know of is linux-drivers.org. Mm-hmm. And I think all of them have pretty much the same goals, basically, is to have develop an HCL, a hardware compatibility list for Linux. This is something that Microsoft used to do. They used to just have a thing of, approved vendors and different hardware components which were, rated as certified for Windows. And they actually did away with that a couple of years ago. Hmm. And instead they, I forget what they've called it, but they went to some kind of weird alternative. Yeah. But the goal of some of these sites is basically to verify that, if you buy this piece of hardware, that, yes, it is either tested with Linux and works really well or doesn't work. And, it's a good thing to check before you pick up a new piece of hardware.
Yeah. And in any case, there is one for Ubuntu, and it is on the Ubuntu.com website. And I will have that link for you on the show notes at freshubuntu.org. So,
Yes, of course. I should have mentioned the Ubuntu-specific one.
Right.
Is on hardware.ubuntu.com. Oh, okay. I just found it. Sorry. hwdb.ubuntu.com.
There you go.
The hardware database.
And that should tell you several things, not just sound cards, but video cards and that kind of stuff, joysticks, Wacom tablets, et cetera, et cetera. And you should be able to find a decent sound card for around $50, I'm sure. I think that was his criteria, was a sound card for around $50. Thank you for that voicemail, though. That was excellent. Anyway, that's going to do it for all our mail. I don't think I have anything else. So, do you have anything else, Peter?
I'm pretty good. I think that's about it. For those of you who are interested, I think we'll publish links to our social networking addresses. So if you're interested in finding us, I'll put my address to my Twitters and Jaikus and my blog and delicious bookmarks and stuff out there. So if you're interested in what we're doing, you can track me. I'm not promising that it's super exciting, but during the course of the week, actually, a lot of the websites and news that we review and other cool topics and stuff that cross my mind, cross my bookmarks, and I post them up on Twitter and Delicious, so you can actually get a little bit of a sneak peek of what's coming up in episodes. And also just see a lot of other stuff that I find interesting that doesn't actually make it into the podcast. Not everything that I blog about is Ubuntu related.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't put a lot into Twitter. Every now and again I'll make a comment like, have a nice weekend or have a nice day and how you doing, blah, blah, blah. Every now and again I will put a link on there, but pretty much I get on Twitter just to enjoy the comments of others. Peter has good stuff on there quite often. This past weekend, you came up with a couple of good articles that I actually read. In any event, yeah, we'll put our usernames on there for our various accounts. Maybe we'll see you on in the Twitterverse or wherever you may happen to be or wherever we may happen to be. Hopefully, somebody will figure out a way, in a decent way, to get it all linked together,
Right now, the best thing I have, and again, that's another, props to Jaikus. Right off the bat, while we were doing this, I caved. I went into Jaiku and I added my Twitters as an RSS feed. So now anything that I punch into to Twitter should show up in Jaiku.
Yep.
That is a feature. They definitely have, you know, Jaiku definitely has more features than Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
I like them both. Twitter, I don't know. I just, for some reason, I settled on that early on, and I guess that's probably where I'm going to stay. But now, at least, you know, you can follow me on Jaiku and on Twitter if you like.
That's right. Great. All right. Well, that's going to do it this week, and I thank you all for joining us. Any parting words for you, Peter?
Darn it all. You know, I had one and I completely spaced. I guess my parting word this week will be,
okay. And mine is, may you be at the front of the line during a circus procession, and you guys have a nice week, and, you'll have to think about that.
That was awesome. I've just, you know, now I'm not going to do looking up, you know, preparation and stuff and looking up news articles and things. I'm just going to do a preparation for parting
words.
That's
right.
How am I supposed to compete with that?
We are all finished here. We will talk again next week. Thank you for joining us, and we are out. Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Man Page Minute. This week we're covering the command which. The syntax of the which command is generally which space and then the name of a command you want to look up. So for instance, if you want to know which Perl interpreter you have on your system, you could type which Perl, P-E-R-L. And on my Ubuntu 6.06 server, I get back a result of user bin Perl. I can also say which, let's say Vim, V-I-M, the VI editor, and it says user bin Vim. Most of your executables are going to be in user bin. Anyway, the which command is useful if you may have multiple versions of the same program installed. Now, this was common back in the day when Perl 4 and Perl 5, for instance, were used. It was common practice to put one in user bin and another in user local bin. I'm not going to get into the details of the differences of those in this segment. But basically, if you wanted to know which path or which executable was going to be in your path first, the which command will tell you so that there's no question about which program you're going to execute. Now, if you have multiple versions of the same program, you can always specify the absolute path. So for instance, if I had user bin Perl, and I also had another version in user local bin Perl, and that's the one that I wanted to execute, I would type user local bin Perl, and then the name of the program that I wanted to run. So that way I can specify and have multiple versions of the same program installed on the system. That's your Man Page Minute, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you once again for joining us, and we hope you did enjoy the podcast this week. I would like to take just a couple of things to close the show. First of all, you can email us at our new email addresses for Peter and I. My email address is harlem@freshubuntu.org. Peter's is petern@freshubuntu.org. And, of course, you can always email us at freshubuntu@gmail.com. We will post links. We'll post our email addresses on our blog at freshubuntu.org. Also at Peter's Soapbox at blogs.nicolaitis.com. The music this week was provided by, of course, as usual, the Iota Colonette. Thank you very much for joining us, and we do hope that you have a nice rest of your week. Thank you, and we will talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye.